they have logos often for...
Oh, they're like the advertising.
We're going to tell you what it is in a moment.
Okay.
So we don't want to spoil the suspense. But John has agreed to go over the pilot program, but we also think it's time now, after a couple of years, to create a full-fledged program for Blue Board signs, and also potentially some additional signage on the welcome to our system and thank you for driving our system, you know, in places where we can't frankly accommodate more Blue Board signs in very congested areas. You know, there might be an opportunity for us, because communities have been so strong in their advocacy for it, to accommodate just some additional signage there. So I'm trying to be delicate.
Great segue.
There you go. There you go, John Benda.
Lucky me, I get to follow two Rocco presentations. I no longer play softball. Although, as you can tell, I do frequent pizza parlors after the game. And I don't remember, or I prefer not to remember, when I turned 50. So with that, I want to give you an overview, a brief overview of our policy. And I pushed the right button, unlike Rocco. The Tow Highway Act actually is the first document that tells us what we can do. It actually empowers the tollway to, in fact, put signs on the system. And uniquely, there are actually some specific provisions in the Act. The signs that identify local communities is actually contained within the Toll Highway Act, an unknown little factor. So when you see the signs identifying adjacent communities, that actually was part of the Toll Highway Act. It's contained
by
within...
By community name or just...
The community name. Power. Just the community name.
Okay.
and so we have the authority to, in fact, put signs on our system. Now, we're guided by several documents, the FHWA Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices, typically referred to as the MUTCD. It's the National Bible on highway signing for interstates as well as other highways. There's what's called the Illinois Supplement to the MUTCD. Actually, the way it works is the federal manual has to be adopted by each of the 50 states, and that then gives each state an opportunity to make some exceptions or modifications to the federal manual dealing with local conditions. So those are the two documents. There's also in Illinois the JCAR, the Joint Committee for Administrative Rules, that then passes and establishes rules, rules of the road and other things having to do with the Uniform Vehicle Code. So that is another process. You'll recall we had to submit our speed limit change on 355 to JCAR. JCAR also passes rules and regulations governing sign installations, and I'll touch on that a little bit. Last and not least, the tollway signage policy, which was adopted in February of 2009 by the board. Our document, the tollway policy, breaks down really into three guideline documents: the tollway signage guideline, the roadway traffic control and communications guides, and that which relates most to the request we get for signs, the third category, the traffic generator and information signage guide. And I'll talk on each of these a little bit. The signage guidelines document is a living document that really describes in detail the vast majority of signs that we are required either by manual or by the Toll Highway Act to put on our system. So you'll see a community identification sign on the lower left, the milepost marker sign, one of our new initiatives. up on top, the pay toll ahead sign, the median crossover prohibition sign, and a large overhead sign indicating direction guidance for motorists on our system. Now, this is a very large document. This is what's used by a lot of our designers and construction, as well as our own people, in terms of putting together guidelines. The second manual is the Roadway Traffic Control and Communications Guide. Really covers two elements of signing. One, the detail signing regarding maintenance of traffic that's used by our contractors as well as by maintenance forces when we're out doing work on the road. The bottom two engineering drawings are typical. Don't expect you to see them. But the thrust here is to make sure that the tollway and IDOT have very similar, if not the same, kind of sign array that the motorists would experience going into construction zones. The hitter worker sign is also a required sign entering any construction zones in the state. So the other broad area that this this category or guideline covers is the communication information signage, where our communication department gets involved with us and with the construction personnel in providing information to our customers regarding projects that are on the system. I've shown on the top left a couple of the original generation signs that were put up early in the CRP. We have since refined communication, has actually had significant input in refining the appearance of these signs to where the top right is a more current version of the type of sign. And we put these out in construction projects to let people know what we're doing, give them an idea of what the impact is going to be, and let them know when they can expect that our construction activity would be completed. We also avail ourselves of this opportunity to tout some of the green initiatives and some of the things we're able to accomplish on some of our projects when they're noteworthy from an environmental perspective. The third category, and that which I want to touch on a little bit more in detail, and actually talk about two proposed new programs, is the Traffic Generator and Information Signage Guidelines. This covers the wide array of various informational and guide signs and informative signs that are placed on the system. The most boring, probably the top right, but very important. If we have a partial interchange, we now put this kind of a sign up so that people who are exiting our system know that there's no ability to re-enter the system at that particular interchange. The bottom right, this sign is actually right down the street on I-88 approaching Naperville, an educational institution signs. And we do not, unfortunately, sign for all, each and every individual educational institution. We have criteria that are is defined in the policy. The top three are actually main campuses for North Central College and Wheaton College, and there's criteria in terms of the number of students that attend on a full-time basis. College of DuPage falls in a separate category because it's huge, and so it gets an indication on the top. The bottom three are actually extension facilities for U of I, Northern, and DePaul. They don't qualify just because of their extension facility, but they actually generate a considerable amount of traffic due to convocations and special events and other activities that they have to meet in the criteria that's contained in the policy. So that you know that we don't just put them up. And that's why you'll see that there are some smaller institutions or other extension facilities that you will not see on our signs. Top left, Rockett State Park, that's a recreational cultural sign. That's up in the Rockford area. And we like that sign and look forward to maybe putting some additional ones like that in the future. The bottom left, to meet the criteria for like a Rockett State Park or for an educational, there's a number of attendees and there's a number of trips that are generated. In some cases, particularly in smaller communities, any one installation may not meet the attendance criteria. So we have a point of interest program that we actually initiated and tested out in the Aurora area several years ago, where we allow three facilities that are available to the public, but each individually that don't meet the attendance criteria, to parlay together and get put on a what's called a point of interest sign. So this is an example of one that's out in the DeKalb area. Originally, it only had two installations on there. We were approached by the city of DeKalb and asked if it would be possible to add a third. We looked at the criteria. It made sense, and so we did that. And we do, in the case of the point of interest signs, look to the local community to help guide us as to what facilities get notification on that sign, so that we're getting input from the local community and we're not passing judgment like the first three that came in the door or something. And that's how we try to balance that out.
Could I just ask a quick question?
Certainly.
Aurora, like Naperville, has multiple interchanges.
Yes.
And, you know, one of these institutions that you have on a sign could be almost equidistant from two of those interchanges. Do you have a rule that basically says you'll put that kind of signage at only one interchange, one and only one?
Yes. The criteria, in fact, the manual addresses that in general terms that we try to follow, and our sign policy also provides that we would only typically put it at one location. We try to look at them individually, though, and if there's some unique circumstance if there's a traffic flow issue where coming from one direction, it may be better to take people off at one than at another, we might make an exception to that. Okay, but typically, it's at the shortest distance interchange or the largest major interchange to that facility is what usually is what guides the effort. Okay. Motorist service signs, or what are technically in the manual called special service signs. Special service signs are signs that are blue background and have facilities actually their logo installed on the sign. Okay, these are fee-based systems typically. Okay, Toro is unique in that we have oases, or our version of a rest area, and so we have a unique situation, and the best sign to cover that is really a blue board sign. There's no fee for that, although the lessee at the Oasis is responsible for maintaining these signs. He has to generate the logos with his vendors, and he actually has to pay contractors to come out and do the installations. We will do routine maintenance on the sign, but the cost of adding or taking away logos as businesses change at the Oasis are the responsibility of the lessee. Several years ago, in 2007, I believe, the TOWA enacted a pilot blue board program on I-90 from Elgin to Rockford. It actually starts at Route 25, was the defined eligible area, and goes up to the end of the TOWA system north of Rockford. It was a pilot program to see if there would be sufficient interest and if there would be a value in putting lodging only signs up. So that is actually a picture of one of our signs that is currently located on I-90.
And they pay for that, and so it kind of breaks even, or we don't, it's not out of pocket on our end.
I'll talk about that, because as we get into a formal ICE program, there are some questions and some direction we may want from the board in terms of how we go. I'll give you a blush on that in a little bit in terms of the current plan. Okay. So special service or blue board signs, we are proposing, and since the board adopted the original sign policy in 2009, we did comment to the board the possibility of looking at expanding that. And so we further developed that over the last couple of years. And we have put together the framework of a lodging-only program and a commercial tourism attraction program. This actually is not one of our signs. This is from Arizona. And as a segue, it's interesting that Arizona right now is in the process. They've privatized these kind of signs years ago in the state of Arizona. Arizona is now considering taking it back and administering it themselves. And I think there's a revenue motive involved in that. And that's something that we will want some direction from the board on going forward. Special service signs. I didn't give you all the criteria here, just enough to give you an overview. Special service blue board signs are only allowed in rural areas. And I'll touch on what that means for the tollway in a minute. Distance to facilities. For lodging, it would be within 3 miles of an interchange. Okay, so only the hotel facilities that are located in close proximity to the interchange, typically within view of the interchange, would be the ones that qualify. But the criteria is 3 miles. So a facility could be 3 miles away, a community could be located a little off our system, they could potentially qualify. Commercial attractions, there's a 5 mile limit. Okay, and those are not hard and fast. It's just a general number that we try to use because you would not want to put an attraction that's 20 miles away on our system. The idea is that your commercial traffic generator would generate additional traffic on our system to use that, and there's a benefit to us for that.
I don't know if it's, is it downstate on 55? Sometimes it shows, you know, 0.8 miles, 1.2 miles underneath the likely to be, you know, McDonald's 0.8 miles.
For each interchange, you would have essentially four signs. You'd have an advance sign on the main line in each direction. That advance sign would look like this, or it would be like that.
All right.
Where it would have the indication. And it tells you this exit. If it's an exit numbered section, you would have actually an exit number on the top. Okay, so out in 88, where we've already created exit numbers, those would have exit numbering on it. This sign here is different. It's a little bit smaller. It still identifies facilities, and that's where you would have an arrow. So the customer knows whether to go right or left. and then we indicate the amount of mileage to the facility. Okay. The attractions program, since it's 5 miles off, further requires that they pursue and get local guidance on the local road, whether it be a county or a state road. So we're not just sending somebody off our system and not guiding them. We make sure that they actually apply and receive approval and get signs on the local system before we would install ours. It's part of the whole system, and it's one of coordination between us and DOT. It's a fee-based system, and here's where something we may want some information or input from the board on. The current state program runs revenue neutral over the life of the sign, which means that they've taken essentially the cost of the sign and the life of the sign, divided by the life, which in our case will be 15 years, divide that further by the 6 indications, and they set up an annual fee that over the 15-year life of the sign or 10-year life, whatever they used, it would pay for itself. That means that the state has actually fronted all the cost of installing the sign. And as you drive across the state, you'll see attraction signs that are blank. Those are signs that were installed by the state under the premise that someone may want to put their sign up there and they just haven't done
it yet. That's pretty bad PR.
Well, that was part of it. Was actually coordinated between IDOT.
No, I mean, it just looks terrible. It's like that town must have died.
Right, for them to put it up before they're
just
right.
bad PR.
You know, our plan would be to secure.
You have at least two or
not
something.
To put up a blank sign, but to
exactly
secure the
right.
advertisers prior to putting the signage up.
You have the option, if you've got a very rural area where there's not a great deal of development, you can put up a sign that's much smaller and only allow 3 indications on it.
I'm
going to
make a move along that area.
Yeah.
I'm really concerned about
And I think that we're looking for, our recommendation to you is to, like the state, make ours a neutral program. This is, you know.
Plus 50%.
I think that this is something that communities want. I think it's important for economic development. We think that it's important for our patrons, particularly in rural areas. And frankly, the amount of revenue that we would generate from this is, you know, not terribly significant relative to the goodwill that we generate. Again, it's other than interchanges, blue board signs have been occupying a great deal of my time over the last
year. Well, see, there we have to add that 50% to cover administrative.
Yeah. Just quickly to give you an idea, if you look at a schematic of our system, the Bluebird program and the attractions program would really only apply in the areas indicated with the blue. So the Stalman 355 from I-55 South, actually one interchange on the north end of 94.
That's right, Wisconsin line.
Yeah, 173 just south of the Wisconsin line. West of Elgin, technically our manual says Route 47, but actually there was some opportunity at Randall. Now, for those signs that were installed prior to our policy being adopted, we're grandfathering in. So any of the signs that exist at about 25 and 31 in Elgin, or the signs that exist at about 31 in Aurora, we would not take down. We will continue those. But moving forward, for example, in Aurora, the urban to rural jump occurs at Orchard Road.
So like in up in near Gurnee, we have the signs for Great America where the theme parks fall this week. But
that's a whole
different
category.
Pay for that, do they
do not pay for that. That falls in. They're a major, major regional traffic generator, and that's why they get a sign.
Okay, and then let's the other signs that we're talking about.
I'm trying to click to it. Can you give me the next one? It doesn't want me to go.
Urban General Service Center?
No. On the south end of this tri-state, we've been working with the Chicago Southland Chamber and looking at their signing requests, and we've come up with what we hope will at least provide some relief and support to them in response to their request for blue boards. We cannot install blue boards at Halstead and some of the interchanges where they would like them. It is just inappropriate. It would violate the manual and it would violate our policy. We have, however, taken a look at our welcome sign coming into the system, and we have two of them, one coming from the west, one coming from the east, down on 294. And this is currently what the sign shows. We're proposing a supplemental welcome sign that would be located in reasonable closer proximity to that, but separately visible, that would indicate to people entering our system that these services using the international symbol are available at most 294 interchanges. We don't want to say it all because we can't guarantee that, but we think that that this at least would provide some guidance to customers who are approaching Halsted. It wouldn't conflict with the Oasis because it's not an interchange, and it's something that we feel we can do. Likewise, at the exit down in that area, the request from Mr. Garrett was for some notoriety for Torrance Avenue. This is another sign that we could install in conjunction with our thank you sign as you leave our system, to let people know that there were facilities and services available at the Torrance Avenue exit. In this case, we would be very specific and indicate the mileage because you have to cross the 394 interchange before you approach Torrance.
So this would keep them on our Illinois side?
Theoretically, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's makes would. Some sense if we're going to at least say, you know, we don't have to tell them that, but that lets them know that there is stuff here rather than going into Indiana. Same thing
or
probably
waiting.
Up near Beloit or in Gurnee, too. Yeah.
This is just an overview. We plan to return to the board in a couple of months with a specific program recommendation in which all the details would be enumerated. And we'll be required to have a resolution to amend the current policy to add the blue board and the other programs. The welcome sign, unless there are no objections, we're going to proceed with because we have the ability to do that within our current policy. Any questions? Sorry it took so long.
No, thank you. It was helpful. We always pack too much into the agenda, so it's no individual presenter's problem. It's just we always have to more than we need. Keep us entertained. Any questions or comments on this? So you will be coming back to us with more specific questions.
I think it's progress on a very difficult situation because there's always been suggestions that businesses along the tollway are failing because we don't have signs to tell people to get off. And that may or may not be the case. And I think this at least acknowledges that coming into Illinois, and it is foreseeable, those few that are in a pretty highly congested area, that this lets people know that they're going to get off. And most of the businesses have high tower signs anyway. And this simply draws a little more attention to it, and I think it's good.
So thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
And John and others for coming up with a solution. It's very helpful.
And Paul, who's spent a great deal of time touring the system with various community
representatives. I wanted to tell the board that I appreciate that we have a sign policy because John and I are on the operation side of the roadway. It does have a safety impact. There are a lot of rules and standards that govern how you place these signs. A lot of engineering goes into it, and you know it's good that you know we've established some of our own standards that kind of help us respond evenly and consistently to the requests, which are numerous, that come to us.
And we don't want to get clutter so that it distract the drivers and run into
each other.
All
right. Thank you. Right. Okay, I understand there is nobody here who is asked to speak during the public comment period, is that correct? Okay, then may I have a motion to approve the minutes from the regular board meeting?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed for the executive session minutes?
So moved.
Second?
Aye.
Yes, thank
second.
You. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, great. We have a comment and then a little short presentation from Trenise. I want to thank everybody very much. You can walk up, Trenise, for taking the time to meet with Trenise and me separately on board organization and future board activities. We've gotten a lot of very useful comments, one of which you'll see had been actually put into practice today. We have fewer people in the boardroom than we've had in the past, which was something, not that we wanted to cut anybody out, but it just seemed as if the people who were not participating in the meeting could be using their time back in their offices doing their work. So we have people here who are participating or need to be here for some reason, just to show you we were listening. And Denise is going to summarize quickly the things that we heard. That's the emphasis of this presentation. The end of the presentation, she's going to give a little hint of future direction. We don't want to spend too much time talking about this. We'll have other opportunities to do it. But we want to make sure we have captured everything here that we had heard from you and make sure we presented it in a fair way. So thank you, Trenise.
Okay, no problem.
We to just summarize some of the things that we talked about with each of you at the end of the last quarter. We talked about the role of the board, your assessment of the board's performance, whether or not the board was incorporating the governor's priorities. We talked about the director's satisfaction with governance or your job satisfaction. We also talked about how we can improve the board and committee work and the meeting logistics. And this is what we came up with. Most of you agree that the board does a good job of fulfilling its fiduciary duties, reviewing and approving contracts, budgets, and audits. All of you agree that the creation of the working groups was helpful, particularly the customer service and the OASIS working groups. Most of you also found that the information that you received from the management team prior to the meetings and during the meetings to be helpful. Many of you cited that the quality of the information has improved since Christy has come on board. And you also cited the multi-year financial projection presentation that was given last month as an example of that. Most of you agree that your fellow board members are engaged in the discussions, and we saw examples of that today. And you also credited Chair Wolf with increasing transparency efforts for the board. Opportunities for improvement. Although all of you acknowledge that the importance of continued oversight of contracts, budgets, and audits, most of you wanted to spend more time devoted to planning and policy development. You also wanted to see the board utilize more of the professional expertise of the board members. Some of you indicated that you wanted to see summary presentations of the advanced written materials. You receive an awful lot of material that you review for hours before you get here. And sometimes there is not a close connection to the material you received before the meeting and what we actually talk about during the meeting. And you wanted to see a closer connection to that. And then lastly, a couple of you mentioned that you wanted to have more community involvement. For some of you, that meant actually going out into the community and presenting on behalf of the board and sort of acting as ambassadors. And for others, that meant actually having meetings within the community so more people could actually attend and participate. Regarding incorporating the governor's priorities, most of you gave yourselves high marks for enhancing customer service, and you credited the customer service working group with that. You also gave yourself high marks for transparency and accountability. You mentioned live webcasts and online reports. As far as accountability, you talked about the ethics presentations that you've received over the past few months and also certain bylaw revisions that have increased your accountability. Lastly, you also talked about fostering environmental responsibility as a positive for this board. You mentioned the energy reduction measures, some that we heard about earlier today, and then Jeff Redding is going to give us a presentation next month about that as well. Some improvement opportunities. There was a lot of discussion about promoting regional economy, and we obviously just talked about this. Some of you cited the regional project presentations as a good start towards promoting regional economy. Others of you questioned whether or not this is the role the board should play, and maybe the board should be focused on making sure that this tollway is profitable rather than looking at the regional economy. You talked about increasing collaboration among agencies. Some of you cited the Earth Day Summit as a good start, but others of you think that there's definitely more work that can be done, especially on specific projects to collaborate with other agencies. Regarding your job satisfaction, nearly all of you said that you would like to have more formal board orientation and ongoing education about the tollway. You cited in-depth overview of the business functions and perhaps a review of the board statutory duties and bylaws. Several of you mentioned conducting field trips to major project sites in lieu of just seeing presentations or maybe in addition to those presentations. Several of you mentioned attending regional and national transportation conferences could be a plus because it's an opportunity for you to learn about best practices in other areas and bring that information back to the tollway. And nearly all of you indicated that you would like to see the board work focused on one day and the committee work on another day. And that would give you an opportunity to have more discussions. Because even today, you notice that we are rushing through presentations so that there's not a lot as much discussion. If we separated the days, you might have more discussion. So generally, you agreed that the board should move from just being an administrative board to a more